Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Trisha's True Crime Radio on the Blog Talk Network, brought to you by Canines with the Cause. This is a great nonprofit organization with a mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. Check out their website at caninswithacause.com. So glad you're all with us tonight because I am exhausted, not tired, just physically and mentally exhausted. Why? There's too much true crime out there. I can't take it all. I didn't even have the energy tonight to make my industrial-sized mega macho nachos and then devour them like a pack of wild hyenas. That's how exhausted I am by it all. It being cases. True crime cases. Just today, accused killer Jodi Arias took the stand in her defense. This was big news. Nobody expected her to take the stand. She's accused of brutally slaughtering her boyfriend. And she's guilty. She's admitted she's done it. But she said she did it in self-defense. She took the stand today. Big, big news. Then we had big, good news, finally. That six-year-old boy in Alabama that has been, eight-year-old boy that's been held hostage for 6 days has been rescued, and his kidnapper, who was keeping him in a bunker, has been killed. And I'm sure we're going to find out more and more about this strange case as the weeks go on. But that's just the true crime for today. I'm still working on a case that happened 16 years ago, and I'll never catch up. Let's face it, in the year 2030, you're going to click on Trisha's True Crime Radio from the rest home, which I'll be broadcasting from as well. And then I'll finally be talking about Jodi Arias' taking the stand today. That's how far behind I am. So let's stop talking about the future and deal with the past. Big, huge news from the JonBenet Ramsey case. JonBenet was murdered in her home over 16 years ago. We have found out through an article by Charlie Brennan, two very, very brave jurors came forward and told us the grand jury indicted John and Patsy Ramsey. They indicted them for the death of their daughter, child abuse, extreme child abuse. And Alex Hunter just blew off the indictment, decided not to sign it, decided to go forward and act like nothing happened. They indicted the Ramseys in 1999. And now this is what's unusual. Grand juries are the gold standard. What that is the prosecutor presents his best evidence to a group of people to help him decide whether to take a case to trial or not, and they use it as an investigative tool as well. Subpoenas are issued, people testify and such. Then what happens is when they issue an indictment, the prosecutor says, hey, I got a great case. They go to trial. Not Alex Hunter. But here's the weird thing that happened. In this particular grand jury case, a Ramsey sympathizer, Detective Lou Smith, who worked for the Boulder DA at the time, was allowed to come in and give his presentation that he claimed showed an intruder was the one who killed JonBenet. So in this oddball grand jury situation, you have somebody actually giving the defense a voice, which is just doesn't happen. Okay. Now, later in life, Lou Smith had Alzheimer's, from what I understand. And I'm not saying this to be cruel, but I have often wondered if this affected his ability during the Ramsey case to see things logically, because Lou Smith was a smart man. He was a great cop. And to me, that's the only reason I could think of that would make someone who was so reasonable do something so unreasonable as testify to the grand jury about a phantom intruder. I don't know. Now, here's another big bombshell. We do have bombshells here that are true bombshells on True Crime Radio. Grand juries in Colorado are a secret. That's it. End of story. Nobody is supposed to say anything. That's why the two grand jurors that came forward did so under threat of prosecution. I doubt they'll be prosecuted. But something that our very own cynic has found out about Colorado law is basically mind-blowing. In a nutshell, Colorado law states that if there is an indictment, then the grand jury testimony must be made public. That's it in a nutshell. Cynic found this. Not some seasoned reporter, not some lawyer. Cynic, our own wonderful cynic. Now, I'm sure there is some gray area here because the prosecutor, Alex Hunter, I want to carry Linwood's love child. I love him so, Hunter. Yes, he does love Linwood. He didn't sign the indictment at all. And that, I think, is the gray area that maybe makes it so we can't see the grand jury testimony. I don't know. We're going to investigate and get into all of this tonight. First up, he wrote the book that broke the case wide open again. But this time, I think it's open for good. Police Chief of Telluride, Colorado, and former Boulder DA investigator into the Ramsey case, Chief James Kohler. Chief Kohler, welcome tonight.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you, Chief Kohler. Also joining us is longtime Ramsey case follower. He is much loved in the forum world, Bob C. Bob C., are you here? Bob C.? Hello? Is he here? Where's Bob
C.? I'm here.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. Okay. Bob C., we're going to come to you in just a little bit because you do have some interesting questions for Chief Kohler. But first
That's cool.
of all, Chief Kohler, you wrote the book, A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet. Great book. How's it been doing? You've sold quite a few copies, correct?
Last count, I think, from the publisher, publisher and printer was maybe about 1,200, 1,300 copies.
That's good.
That's not bad.
In this day and age, with it not being on Kindle, that's very good. Let's talk about the grand jury. And I know this is a touchy area, and we're not going to ask you anything that happened in the grand jury because, Chief Kohler, you can't talk about it. But in your book, you have so many incredible revelations. And you did touch on the grand jury just a little bit. But first of all, were you surprised that these two grand jurors came forward and talked to Charlie Brennan?
In some regard, yes. You know, it's not well known, but Charlie approached me last year in September and told me he was working on this project. I told him I was not able to assist him. But I was surprised to see the article come out because I thought that he was maybe working on a book that included part of the grand jury story. From you know what he'd been delving into, but I'm kind of surprised that people didn't come forward earlier. I mean, Linda Hoffman too had been to court trying to get permission to go out and tell her story, as far as a witness that had testified before the grand jury. So, you know, if the sources he had are accurate, then I'm kind of surprised that it didn't come out earlier than 13 years after the event.
Well, you bring up the fact that Linda Hoffman Pugh tried to get the courts to let her come out and tell her story. Mary Lacy lied to the Supreme Court. Mary Lacy stated that the grand jury issued no indictment, plain and simple. She said there was no indictment. She knows better. There was an indictment. I know you're not a lawyer, and I'm trying to find somebody that's willing to comment on this. Everybody seems to be so afraid to comment on the Ramsey case. That's why I think you're so incredible, because you have come forward with so much. Mary Lacy tells the judges in Linda Hoffman Pugh's case, no, there was no indictment. Colorado law states if there's an indictment, then it's made public. Are there any repercussions here for Mary Lacy for doing that, do you think, in your opinion?
Well, I've briefly scanned some information you sent for the Forms for Justice line on that, and I'm not real familiar with that particular case that you're citing. The one I was thinking about was the civil suit that involved Wolf and the Ramseys in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd have to delve further into what the testimony was in the case that you're citing that involves Linda Hoffman Pugh.
Well, basically, it's what happened in that particular case is Mary Keenan told the judges there was no grand jury indictment. Isn't that a lie? Isn't she lying in court?
Well, if Charlie's information is right and there's a record of document that indicates the grand jury indicted the parents, then that would seem to be misleading as far as any statement she provided to the courts in that suit involving Linda Hoffman Pugh.
Exactly. I mean, it's just obvious. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to talk a little bit about process here.
Mm-hmm.
And I promised to send you some email with some of the color of the statutes on rules of criminal procedure, Tricia, but I was looking at some of the stuff over the weekend, and the current statute indicates under 16.5201 that every indictment shall be signed by the foreman of the grand jury returning it and by the prosecuting attorney, his or her assistant, or his or her deputy. And I think one of the legal analyst that was quoted in the newspaper articles that followed Charlie's revelations a week or so ago, suggested that perhaps this should have been signed and returned to the district court in Boulder County, and that then Alex should have proceeded with a request in front of the court to dismiss the indictment if he didn't think there were sufficient grounds to move forward from a prosecution standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the things that you raise about the questions about information not coming out about the indictment, about Alex is not signing it, and the secrecy that was maintained to try to conceal that indictment, I'm sure raises some eyebrows today.
Exactly. And the thing that I find interesting is Cynic, and you've spoken with Cynic on our show before. You know how smart he is. You know, basically that's what the law says. And I think the gray area here too is what Alex Hunter didn't do, and that was what he was supposed to do, which he did that a lot, apparently, in the Ramsey case. You know, he was supposed to sign it, like you said, and then go before a judge and say there's not enough evidence. But he just ignored the grand jury. And I don't know if there'll be any repercussions. There never seems to be any repercussions in the Ramsey case for the people that do so much wrong in this case. The only person that's been to jail is Fleet White, for goodness sakes. You know, the one guy who's the innocent here who just wanted to see justice. Chief Kohler, we have a few more questions here. I do appreciate you coming out. Do you think the grand jury came forward because of your book? Do you think that might have had something to do with it? I do.
You know, that's just a matter of speculation. Charlie never represented that might have been the reason for people coming forward.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded to me like he'd been speaking to these people for quite some time.
Okay.
And this was September when we chatted. You know, he'd been out for a couple months at that juncture, but he might have a better idea as to whether or not that was something that prompted the jurors to come forward.
Yeah, he won't. I've tried to contact him, and he was very nice, sent me back a very nice email and said, I will tell you what I'm telling everybody, and that is the article stands alone, and we're not giving any interviews. So I'm like, well, great. I tried to bribe him. Didn't work. It was terrible. Now, this is from Cynic, too. At the Telluride Library, you spoke of the two filings requested by Beckner with two DAs. What is that about?
You know, I was trying to remember what that comment might have been about. My recollection with Beckner's filing was in 2000 when he felt that they had investigated every viable lead that was coming through the door, and that, as I indicated in my book through his comments, was that he didn't think he wanted to continue to build a defense case and waste the time of his investigators on leads that didn't seem to be proving to be with any merit. And so he decided to file the case or leave it with the DA's office, and either they could file it or not, based on what they had presented over all the years that they investigated that murder. And so that's the only recollection I can think of that I think references the filing that referred to Mark Beckner's comments.
Okay. We're going to be talking here a little bit about what John Ramsey has stated about the grand jury and the indictment, because it is so shocking what he said. But I want to bring Bob C in. We've known Bob C for years. He has a longtime case follower, and Bob has read your book. Bob, we're going to talk a little bit, and this will kind of snowball into John Ramsey's latest comments about the case. There is a terrorism aspect to this case that just seems to have gone unnoticed. What do you want to talk about that?
Exactly. I'm not really interested in what John Ramsey has to say,
mm-hmm.
but I do have some questions for Mr. Kohler. I'm Bob C. from the Forums for Justice, and it's cold outside, but I'm about to boil over with this recent grand jury revelation. Anyway, I wanted to thank you for returning some sanity to this case that has become this mess of lies in the media. It was really refreshing to see an objective viewpoint on the case, you know, coming out in the last couple of years, because I honestly had given up hope on this thing ever getting solved or any progress being made.
Well, thank you. That was my intent in writing the book and kind of revealing my journey of discovery in the case.
Well, good. So I've got a couple of questions. I just wanted to say good job on the book, but also I've got, I guess, 5 questions here to ask you, if you wouldn't mind. The
sure.
First one is, would you agree that for Mary Lacy to publicly exonerate the Ramseys, she'd have to believe that the ransom note was not genuine, or was genuine?
You know, I think a lot of the intruder theorists chose to ignore certain pieces of evidence that pointed towards the involvement. And, you know, I think she continued to hang her hat on the DNA. You know, to her, that unexplained degraded DNA in the panties of JonBenet pointed to an intruder. And when you focus on that and don't look at some of the other things that suggest an intruder was not involved, then you've got tunnel vision. And in some cases, some people just can't give up on that. And there are a number of people who believe in the intruder theory that would not give up on that particular aspect of that particular evidence. So I know that that's what she relied on heavily. She went to some lengths to exonerate the family after the other touch DNA test results returned and ignored, apparently, the ransom note.
Right, but this note exists at the crime scene, and you can't ignore that it's there and saying that a group of terrorists striking at the United States through John Ramsey and trying to extort money out of him. I mean, you can't ignore that unless you think that the ransom note is a fake. I mean, is this crazy on my part?
Well, I guess there's 2 different ways you can look at the ransom note. One, do we take it at face value, as I put together in a constructive theory of how a group of intruders may have participated in this crime, or do you ignore it based on the fact that Patsy could never be eliminated as the author of the note? So you're looking at it from 2 different perspectives. My thought was we had people that were pointing to John or Patsy being the author, and that was ignored.
But I understand what you're saying, Kohler, but you cannot ignore the fact that this ransom note was in the locked house. This ransom note was not found in a ravine in the Colorado mountains or even out in the back alley of the Ramsey's house. It was found directly in the home, which was, according to John Ramsey and Patsy as well, a locked house with the kidnapping victim that was never kidnapped.
I know what you're saying, Bob C., but and you're right, Lacey shouldn't have ignored it, and you would think she would have to believe that it was a foreign faction, but I think we're all trying to put logic in an illogical situation. You know, if you try and put logic into Mary Lacey, you'll go crazy.
Well,
I know,
when the DNA test results come back, you know, that's how I threw that possible theory out of your terrorism, foreign faction being involved. You know, that's what makes sense if you're looking at following the DNA evidence. Now you are looking at a terrorism foreign faction group that was responsible for the murder and kidnap of JonBenet. But how realistic is that? That's the question I ask.
Exactly. It's not very realistic.
Mr. Kohler, I've got to take exception with that. I understand what you're saying, but there has not been one word. I've followed this case from day one, and there has not been hardly a word about foreign terrorism, especially after in a 9/11 post world, about terrorism being involved in this case. You know, it's not about opinion. It's about what is written in a ransom note that came directly from the person that kidnapped and or killed JonBenet Ramsey.
Right. And I'm not looking at terrorism. I'm looking at the foreign faction of who may have been involved if you read the note for its face value.
All right. Bob, I think I just want to say one thing. You don't believe there's a foreign faction here at all. I think what you're trying to say is, you know, why didn't if Mary Lacy did this, why didn't she investigate a foreign faction if she believed the Ramseys in it? And she didn't, especially, because she's an idiot. I mean, you know, because she would look like an idiot and she knows it.
Listen, the first thing about solving a crime, and I'm sorry, I'm really pissed off about this jury stuff, but the first thing about solving a case is establishing motive. And the motive is right there in the ransom note. It says, we have your daughter, mm-hmm. we don't like your country, we want this money from you, and we respect you and all that other bullshit crap. And yeah, it's astonishing to me that this admission from the kidnappers has been almost totally ignored for 15 years now.
Mm-hmm. And
I mean, it's all been about stun guns and DNA and what other crap has gone on through the years, sexual predators. But the ransom note firmly says that this is a terrorist thing against the U.S. and that they want to extort money out of John Ramsey. But ever since that ransom note came to life, there's been almost no mention of that aspect of the case.
Well, exactly, because if there was, then people would have to realize that it was a ridiculous aspect, and that's why Team Ramsey has done a damn good job of making sure the whole ransom note is not mentioned at all, let alone this ridiculous faction. But nobody see. I know what you're saying. There's no media that picks up on it. Nobody picks up on it. Chief Kohler picks up on it. He immediately picked. I'm sorry. I don't mean you're here. I don't mean to talk about you like you're not here. We do talk about you a lot behind your back, Chief Kohler, but not tonight. I promise.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way. But Chief Kohler, right? I mean, you would think if Mary Lacy really believed the Ramseys were innocent, wouldn't she investigate a foreign faction, for God's sake? She must not in her heart really believe it. I don't know. I guess I'm asking you to tell me what Mary Lacy thinks, and I know you can't because she's nuts. But
I think the train of thought with the intruder theorists was that this was a disturbed individual who chose to sexually assault John Vianney when he broke into the home, and that he had written this as just kind of a cover for his intent. I don't think anyone ever believed that there was a true terrorist or foreign faction involved in this. And I think it's just ludicrous that you think a terrorist faction would want to target John Ramsey in that fashion. And, you know, so I kind of create that theoretical construct based on the DNA evidence, and it plays to how ludicrous I think it is to believe that, you know, if you follow DNA evidence, that you've got six people involved in that kidnapping.
So the intruder theorists are basically saying, okay, yeah, he said foreign faction, but he just did that because he was a disturbed individual, and we know that, and it's not true.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm saying that's what the intruder theories are saying.
No,
I
know,
side.
Tricia. I'm sorry.
I know, I know you're wound up, Bob, but it's true. I mean, that's what they think, okay? And it's ridiculous, but I think this just shows how good of a job Linwood has done in keeping the ransom note out. It is. Okay, let's see. You have some other questions? Because I know Chief Kohler has to go, and I don't want to keep him because pretty soon he won't take my phone calls, and pretty soon there'll be restraining orders, and it'll get ugly. So what other questions do you have?
Can I ask just like two more?
Sure.
Mr. Kohler, Casey Anthony spent some time behind bars for lying to the police. Why have the Ramseys never been pursued in that regard, especially given the fact that they had admitted that they lied about Burke being awake that morning?
Well, I think
any idea
proving that is one thing, and you know there, you know, people lie to the police all the time. You know, lying under oath is one thing, lying in an interview is another, and so that speaks to maybe intent to deceive, to misdirect and mislead people. It could, you know, speak to the motivation for being accessories. Or actually being perpetrators of an act, but you're not going to be able to arrest somebody for lying to you under those circumstances. Lying to the grand jury or lying in a court of law under oath, that's a bit another circumstance.
Go ahead, Bob.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say,
Sorry.
You go.
Go ahead, Tricia.
Okay, I'm going. Okay. basically, okay. Also, no matter what, even if there was a law that said, okay, John and Patsy Ramsey, you misled the police and therefore you are obstructing justice, which I think they could, the police might be able to do. Even if the police wanted to, the DA wouldn't. You know, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter even if you could charge them. I mean, hell, they returned an indictment and they still didn't do anything. So I think the answer to the question is, no matter how good the evidence would be for them interfering with a police investigation, they'd never be charged because the police would charge them and the DA would just throw it out. And I think the police knew that all along. Okay, Bob, you can go now. I won't interrupt, I promise.
Okay. I spoke to a Boulder attorney early on about this exact matter, and mm-hmm. he told me that the conventional wisdom was that if you want to prosecute for a murder trial, that you don't want to give away any of your information, and that is why the Ramseys were never indicted for murder.
Mm-hmm.
But he also included the fact that you can charge people for a lesser charge, like obstruction of justice or, tampering with witnesses or whatever. I don't remember exactly. It's been 15 years. But that there are ways to proceed with this thing. And what I don't get is why every single person that wants to put some pressure on the Ramseys has been discounted as being obsessed or crazy or blind to the other evidence, and it's just astonishing to me, because I'm pretty sure that as a guy who's never even gotten a traffic ticket, that if I had a dead six-year-old in my basement with a fake ransom note, I would be up at least in jail.
We all would,
right.
And that's just it. It's, again, we're dealing with the Boulder DA's justice, and it's a justice that Chief Kohler, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you saw firsthand just how ridiculous it was. Now, we do have a question here that I think is important, and this comes from our chat room, from Open Mind for You. Chief Kohler, due to the grand jury leak, do you believe the DA has enough justification to call a new grand jury? Is that even possible, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's possible, but and if Stan Garnett believes that he could prosecute something in this case, I don't think he would hesitate to do that call-up for a grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. From my perspective, looking at the possible charges that would be brought in a different set of scenarios, the statute of limitations have run on almost every charge that you deal with the brain at the moment. I tell people it's a complicated legal landscape. You'd have to get into some of the theoretical discussions about what potential charges would be brought. But I said it repeatedly, I think all the statute of limitations that could have possibly been charged had run out by the time I took the case in 2005. And barring a confession of some sort or some other tremendous piece of evidence that would help Stan Garnett prosecute this case, I don't think you're ever going to see charges brought against John Ramsey or anyone else.
Would you like to see the grand jury testimony come out? Would you like to see that if what Sinek has discovered is really true and we can make it happen? Do you think that would be a good thing?
I think that would be very interesting. I don't know if that's a records request through the district court in Boulder, which is where those files would be deposited, after the conclusion of the grand jury. The police department is not going to have that.
Right.
And I think the court of record is going to be the one that would be.
Well, we're looking into it as a group. We are looking into it, and I don't know what our chances are. With how things go, usually in this case, probably we won't get it, but we very well could. And I think it would be a great thing to see what people said, to see what Fleet White had to say. I would love that. Okay, Bob, see, you had a couple more questions, right?
Yes, two more quick questions. I don't want to take too much time, but Mr. Kohler, do you feel at this point that there's a consensus amongst law enforcement people as to what exactly occurred that night in the Bramsey House?
A consensus?
I'm just talking about theory.
I'm not sure that you'd say a consensus. I'm pretty sure that the majority of law enforcement that were involved in this case do not think an intruder was involved. But as far as who in the family may have been involved, I mean, that involves a great degree of speculation. And even I can't say, based on my read of the circumstances, I could say exactly what I think was truthfully happening in the home that night.
Yeah,
that's,
me too.
That's
the most depressing thing about this case is that even though I personally feel that you can exclude an intruder, I don't think anyone has gotten it exactly right about what had gone down on that night in 1996.
I think you can develop some theories and extrapolate from evidence, from physical evidence, from statements, those types of things, and give you an idea perhaps of what might have happened. But would you be able to prove it? I'd say no.
Okay, and you have one final question, right?
Yes. Mr. Kolar, have you heard from Mary Lacey since you wrote your book? And if so, what did she have to say?
Did
she know that you were
her.
Writing it?
No, she did
I'm
not.
Sorry.
No, she didn't. The last correspondence I had with her was the letter that she sent to me when I was seeking a review of evidence and theories that I had developed after leaving the office. And that was one of the attachments in the book. That was the last correspondence or communication I had from her.
Interesting.
But she did respond to you when you revealed that you thought that intruder was very remote as a theory. You did say that she said that, that line of reasoning would kind of ruin her reputation with the family, right?
She didn't want to harm her relationship with the family. When I was suggesting they needed to look at the family again and also pursue the medical records that had been withheld from Alex Hunter.
Unbelievable.
That was a face-to-face conversation when I was making that presentation in January of 2006.
Have you ever heard of a DA saying, I don't want to hurt my relationship with the suspect's family, with the family of the suspect? It's just mind-boggling. Go ahead, Bobsy. What were you going to say?
Well, I don't want to take up too much time, but I just want to say for the record that as a guy that's been here from minute one on this case, that I don't have a problem necessarily with Hunter or Lacey or Garnett saying that we don't have enough information here or hard facts to indict the Ramseys. But what I have a huge problem with is, well, number one, actually a smaller problem with Hunter saying that, implying that the grand jury did not return an indictment.
Mm-hmm.
But my huge problem is with Lacey exonerating the people that every single piece of tangible evidence in this case points directly to Patsy Ramsey's personal effects. That alone tells me that the focus on this case need not venture from the family. Now, people have been flying to Thailand, to North Carolina over the last 15 years to chase leads that had far less evidence pointing to them. I mean, John Mark Carr was, it turned out, I mean, I laughed when I first heard this, and people can back me up on this, but the first question I wanted to ask Mr. Kolar was, did anybody have any information whatsoever that John Mark Carr was even in Colorado in 1996?
There
was none.
There was nothing. No, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
He wasn't. Absolutely wasn't.
Well, that should be the first question asked.
Mm-hmm.
So when Mary Lacey came out with her, made an arrest in this forum, it really made me question, number one, her intelligence.
Well, exactly.
But then after I thought about it for a while, I thought that she must be...
Yes, Chief Kolar. Hold on one sec. Chief Kolar, what did you want to say?
Tricia, my apologies. I've got another phone call coming in that I need to take.
Okay. I'll tell you what. We're going to talk about the John Ramsey situation. You go ahead and take your phone call. I understand. And thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Appreciate
Fuller.
Your invitation.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okie dokie. Yeah, I knew he had to go. He did have something else happening tonight via a phone call. So, Bob, I understand your frustration. And the problem is, Bob, is we're trying to put legal and ethical logic into the mind of Mary Lacey, and it will never work. We'll lose our minds if we do that.
Well, I'm not going to lose my mind. And the way I look at this thing as it's pretty straightforward. When you start to investigate a case, you have to look at the people who had direct contact with JonBenet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then you go out in radiating circles from that group of people. Okay? Mm-hmm. I have never felt, and I have read every single thing on this case, that John Ramsey sexually molested his daughter. I've never felt that way. But I've also, on the other hand, felt that Ramsey, every single thing in regards to the staging in this case points directly to Patsy Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
So what the hell went on that night? I am not convinced at all that John Ramsey was at the core of this, but I believe that he probably helped with the staging.
Absolutely. You know what, Bob?
Yeah.
We're going to bring in some of our old friends here. We're going to bring in Cynic and Cold Case. And let's see, where are you? Cherokee, right there. Okay.
Okay, excellent.
Cynic, are you with us?
Hey, Tricia.
Hey, Cynic. Did Chief Kohler answer your questions? Okay.
Oh, well, I guess as much as he could. I mean...
Yeah.
As we chatted prior to today, you know, you definitely need a lawyer well versed in the law relating to this to really answer the question properly. But he gave it his opinion, which is all we can ask for.
Now, can you give us in a Reader's Digest version of what you discovered as far as grand jury testimony in Colorado and indictments? Just give us a real quick version.
Well, you guys pretty much sort of gave it that already, and the rest of it is pretty well outlined in my post, so I'd more or less just be reiterating it. But I know one thing that Jim Kohler mentioned, he went to the some of the criminal Colorado Rules of Criminal Procedure, and he quoted from 6.5, and then... And in my post relating to the Hoffman Few case,
mm-hmm.
some of the key portions are in 6.2 and 6.3. Essentially, Linda Hoffman Few. This actually all started with Alex Hunter. This case began with Hoffman Few versus Alex Hunter. When Alex Hunter left office, it then pushed over to Keenan Lacey.
Mm-hmm.
But Hunter, which I didn't actually mention in this post, did not correct the record and say that there was an indictment. And then subsequently, Keenan Lacey didn't make the correction when it rolled over to her. And then the
mm-hmm.
case went to the Colorado Court of Appeals. And then ultimately the case went to the Supreme Court. The Colorado Court of Appeals reversed, actually, in the initial court that this went to, Hoffman Few got the go-ahead to essentially write her book and more or less say what she wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it went to the Colorado Court of Appeals, they reversed that decision. And in my post, it pretty much outlines sort of the comments that that the Colorado Court of Appeals made with respect to the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the case went all the way to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court looked at it, but dismissed it without comment, was the way it was said. So we don't have the Supreme Court's sort of decision on the whole thing, but we do have the record of what the Colorado Court of Appeals said.
Mm-hmm.
And the important things to consider in that in the Colorado Court of Appeals decision is that there are some, they do quote the Colorado Rules of Criminal Procedure, and in that it says that if an indictment is returned,
mm-hmm.
actually says the oath of secrecy shall continue until such time as an indictment is made public, if an indictment is returned, or until a grand jury report dealing with the investigation is issued and made public as provided by law. So one of those three things has to be in place, then the oath of secrecy is technically removed,
mm-hmm.
according to that.
Now,
wow.
Yeah.
That's
so,
great, isn't
keep
it?
Keep going.
That's great.
Keep going, sorry.
So given that and the fact that also in that whole legal proceeding and the record that we have of it, the thing that puts Lacey into trouble, and I believe actually Hunter as well, I didn't really include this, but when I sort of backtracked and looked at the initial where this all began, Hunter is a party in that first court case. So he didn't correct it, and Lacey didn't correct it, and in the record it says that no indictment or grand jury report concerning that murder has been issued, which of course we know
it's
is a lie.
Not true. Right.
So those two things combined make this kind of an interesting legal situation where it could be a case where some lawyers may agree with what I have to say,
mm-hmm.
and there may be some lawyers that disagree with what I have to say. Grand jury, you'll often find it with press requests for transcripts because press is always interested, you know, in what's happening with grand juries,
right.
especially in key cases. And there's a lot of cases involving, you know, sort of back and forth, appeals, et cetera, with respect to, you know, should this be released? No, it shouldn't be released, and so on and so forth. And a lot of times these cases do go all the way up to state court of appeals,
mm-hmm.
or all the way to Supreme Court. So this is one of those cases where I think that it's very possible that, you know, again, there's going to be two sides, and potentially the only resolve might be, you know, at a state Supreme Court or the Supreme Court, you know, of the country.
Mm-hmm. Chief Kohler just forwarded me a PDF file with grand jury laws. I'm going to forward that to you, Cynic, and I want you to go over it with your incredibly sharp mind. That's just amazing that you discovered that. Okay, let's go to, hold on, I've got people texting me and emailing me. Okay, Cold Case, are you there, my dear?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, and let's see, Bob C., are you there still?
Yes.
Okay, I accidentally put you on hold. And Cherokee, okay, Cherokee, let's start with you. We haven't heard from you, well, since the last time you were on and kind of lost your mind. Have you recovered?
Yes, I have, thank you.
Okay, good. Yeah. Oh, hold on one sec. Wait, hold on. Hold on just a minute. Kohler is back. Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah, hold on.
Okay.
Chief Kohler, is that you?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, wow. Oh, thank you for calling back. What a sweetheart. Thank you.
I took care of that phone call.
Oh, well, thank you. Okay, guys, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get back to you in just a little bit. I just want to ask Chief Kohler a couple of quick questions, okay?
Okay, Tricia?
Yeah. Yeah.
And before you get him go, can I also ask him one DNA question?
One DNA question.
Yes, that's all I want. Yes.
One DNA. Go ahead. This is Cherokee. She's a wonderful woman who gets crazy sometimes, but go ahead.
She is brilliant.
Don't hold that against me. Don't,
she
no,
is brilliant. She is brilliant.
Chief Kohler, it's a very great honor to talk to you. You are our hero, obviously, for putting the truth of what's out there. And one of the things I want to ask you about the DNA, and, of course, the test DNA, and that there was the five males, the one woman, you know, there's all this, that Mary Lacey has tried to act like there was just touch DNA from one person that touched the waistband and the crotch, and that's the way she sold it. And, of course, at the press conference, she would allow no questions, and she would also not allow any of the DNA evidence that she had based her, as I call it, bogus exoneration on. She would allow no questions and also allow no evidence to be distributed of those DNA tests, which is highly irregular. And one of the things, anytime you publish DNA evidence or a paper on or anything, it's peer-reviewed, and then you try to replicate that in a lab to make sure it is a correct result. And one of the things, I always had problems with her big PR stunt to exonerate the Ramses, which was totally invalid, and she should never have done it, as we know. She wouldn't allow any independent investigation of that DNA and have another independent laboratory, not Bode, to try to replicate the touch DNA that she based this exoneration on. And I guess my question has two parts to it. The first of all is, would it be possible to have that DNA, or did they destroy everything that they, you know, they did that you know of? Did they destroy the DNA that was found so that it couldn't be replicated? If you don't, or do you understand what I'm saying? Can they?
Is the sample gone? Is the sample gone?
Yeah, the sample destroyed. Yes.
I can't say that for certain. This would be my thoughts on that. Just for the basis of your question about wanting to provide backup verification of those tests, I don't know exactly what the samples are. I don't know in a pending or open criminal case when you may still have someone charged eventually, you know, based on DNA or otherwise. You wouldn't want to contaminate that evidence or destroy evidence that, you know, should be left available for the defense at some point in the future if someone is charged.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be my thought as far as your question goes.
Yeah, there should be samples. So what I'm asking then, if that wasn't destroyed, there should be samples that could be tested by an independent lab to see if the results could be replicated.
It all depends on what the samples are, Cherokee. You know, I don't know what type of samples were left. I know that the DNA test results that came back through the touch samplings and testing were, you know, fairly minute, less than the full 13 markers that are usually, you know.
Yes, and that goes exactly to my next question and next point, the contamination and the possible contamination. And as I've posted on FFJ, on Forms for Justice, I am a student of DNA, genetics, and that sort of thing, and I am very well aware of contamination issues when they're trying to extract DNA from ancient bones or any kind of site. And I also posted about how just recently they had tried to extract DNA from some Native American samples that were in Florida, and one of them came back with European mixture, and they figured out it was contaminant, a small amount of contaminant, from one of the people that were from one of the persons who were doing the DNA testing, and they were suited and gloved, and they still were able to get their gloves. And just recently, their DNA in there, just recently, this Richard III skeleton that was found in England,
mm-hmm.
the woman who actually brought him out, she suited up, had on a helmet and double gloves just to prevent contamination. And we look back at what happened with JonBenet. First, the crime scene, you know, John Ramsey pulled her up from the basement, contaminated all of that, put her underneath the Christmas tree. They threw an old jacket on her, took that off, put an old blanket on her. Patsy got down and rolled around on top of her, wearing the clothes she'd worn the night before. There was all kind of touch DNA contaminant put on JonBenet and her clothing. And so you cannot tell me there was not some kind of contamination. Then we go for the techs, the EMTs that touched her. None of them were tested. Lacey did not test any of them. Nobody in the labs were tested. And they're more and more finding out that contaminant within DNA, it's not like on CSI or anywhere else. There is a lot of DNA contamination when you're pulling samples if the proper procedures are not followed. And so my question to you is, do you think there's a possibility that this touch DNA and even the original, quote-unquote, degraded DNA that's found in underwear could be contaminant? And is there a possibility that we could... Would anyone have access to be able to re-examine those supposed things that Lacey did? Or is this completely, totally shut, that we will never be able to have independent tests run on this so-called DNA that has, quote-unquote, exonerated the Ramseys?
Well, that sounds like a little bit of a two-part question.
It
one
is,
is
I'm sorry.
I don't think
I
that
and,
I don't
and
think
Boulder
PD would at this juncture allow additional backup testing to confirm the touch DNA that Mary Lacey announced. The other part of that is that that was part of my argument was that the first DNA found in the panties was probably an artifact that had been deposited there sometime prior and had nothing to do with the murder. And the other trace samples that were beneath her fingernails, as well as the other implements used in her crime, you know, if you want to rely solely on the DNA, then you're having to look at six potential perpetrators.
Mm-hmm.
If not, then you need to look at the other evidence that points outside the intruder theory and suggests that some type of family involvement cover-up took place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I evaluated the DNA. And it sounds like you have, you know, certainly a much stronger scientific background in that regard than I do. But, you know, technology improves all the time. And like you say, there's contamination, even when you double glove. I mean, what about trace that's on the gloves when you're handling them and it's supposed to be sterile?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. I'm
Cherokee,
sorry. Yes.
Oh, you are fine, my dear. I'm going to put you on hold here so we don't have any background noise, and I'm going to talk to Chief Kohler for just a little bit because I know he's got a full night planned. Okay, thanks, Cherokee. We'll be back. I'm going to get back to everybody here in just a little bit. Everybody hang on. Chief Kohler, again, thank you so very much for calling back. That was very kind of you to do. Let's talk a little bit about what John Ramsey said this week. When told about the grand jury indictment, John Ramsey just said basically it was more drama. What more drama is Kim Kardashian, you know, leaving a boyfriend. What more drama is Britney Spears shaving her head. That's drama. This isn't drama. This is your child that you're being accused of murdering. What are your thoughts on what John Ramsey said?
Well, I thought they're a little cavalier, and I was wondering what the context in which they were made. But you know, I guess he feels like he's in the clear. I think it's fairly evident that there will be no charges ever brought against him or his family, and he's maybe taking a little bit different attitude now that he doesn't have to worry about a prosecution.
The biggest story of the case in years. He has been indicted for the death of his daughter, and he just says it's more drama. And you're right. I do think it's his he's feeling safe and as arrogant as always. How old is Burke Ramsey now? He's 28, I believe, because JonBenet would have been 23. He's 27 or 28. Not protected anymore by anybody, by the law. He's his own person. I want your opinion. Do you think the investigators will ever try again to talk to Burke Ramsey?
I think it's pretty clear that he won't have anything to do with the police department, and it'd just be a wasted effort on their part.
You know, that's too bad.
I think
because
they fully realize that.
Somebody needs to man up in this case and do the right thing, and it's not going to be John Ramsey. And I've always held out hope that Burke would be the one. If he is involved, and that's me saying it, nobody else, if he was involved, he was only 9 at the time. There's nothing anybody can do to him. But anyway, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. Let's talk a little bit now about the media interest. Since this new revelation, any thoughts about perhaps trying to get on one of the bigger media shows?
I haven't had any inquiries since the ones from last summer. I did speak to a few of them in New York last fall. Mm-hmm. And rather than just a 5-minute interview, we were talking about the possibility of maybe a 20 or 30 minute investigative piece that would go over some of the information that I presented in my book.
Mm-hmm.
I did do another Meet the Author presentation at the Wilkinson Library last week. They did videotape that. We broke it down into a little bit better sized digestible chunks based on topics. And so I think the plan is that once they do some of that editing, we had some video problems with some of the stuff I showed, but we'll release that either on Wilkinson's library site or also on YouTube. The last presentation I did in October was an hour and a half. They cut it down to about a 40-minute presentation.
Mm-hmm.
It was posted for maybe one day before I asked it to be pulled down because I wasn't quite sure I was ready to have some of that information released that I put in that presentation, but we'll see. I'm hoping that that'll be done here sometime within the next few weeks, then we'll get that posted. Yeah, it'll be a little bit more of an investigative piece and live interview.
Yeah, just let us know, and we'll put it all over. We'll get it all over the internet. Everybody will be able to see it. Let's see. I just got a text from Cynic. Burke is 26 years old, so I made him a little older than he actually was. You created your theory of prosecution in your book. This comes from Midwest Mama at WS, and you send it to Garnett, correct?
Yes.
Okay. since you did that, are you holding out hope that maybe Stan Grinnett might just go, hey, this is good enough? Or do you think that, and I, again, I'm just asking you to speculate, do you think it's just not going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. If you know, Stan thought that he had a prosecutable case, I have no doubt that he would go forward and do that. And mm-hmm. I just don't believe that he thinks he's got a case, and I have to agree with him.
Yeah, well, especially now after everything, it would be certainly difficult. That's the understatement of the year. Chief Kohler, give us your website address where people can pick up your book.
It's www.ventuspublishing.com.
Spell that, because I wasn't quite sure what you said.
V-E-N-T-U-S.
Oh, Ventus.
Publishing.
Okay, V
Ventus,
is Victor.
Yeah, V is Victor, E-N-T-U-S, Publishing. I can email it, too, if you wish.
Okay, no, I've got it here. In fact, I've got it I've got it posted on Web Sleuths. I just wanted to hear your voice say it. That's all.
Sure. I just went through. There were some grammatical and some typing errors that missed the proofreading efforts, unfortunately. And I'm just getting ready to have those corrected, and we'll be doing another printing. So.
And I want to bring this up.
Few weeks.
I want to bring this up in case people don't know. Chief Kohler paid for this publication himself. He did everything himself. And he put basically his retirement on the line. This isn't about making money for him at all. It's about the truth. So anybody that says anything differently, you're absolutely wrong. So it's not, you know, it's not Random House Publishing. Any thoughts on having a somebody doing an audiobook for you?
I haven't looked at audio. I have tried to download the manuscript to Kindle. Mm-hmm. I've tried to load it to some other professional companies that will look at it. One company has it. They're supposed to get back to me. I haven't heard yet, but it's proving a little problematic, I think, because of all of the scanned images and JPEG images and documents that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's having a difficult time downloading electronically, and so that's the holdup with the electronic version.
Okay.
And I have to see what the cost is going to be once they quote me on what it'll take to format it properly.
Right, right. It's
going to be worthwhile.
Well,
but
again,
I would like to get it out there in an electronic version if I could.
Again, you're doing this all on your own and with your own money, and it's something we truly and greatly appreciate. Chief Kohler, I know you have to run. Thank you so much for calling us back. That was so sweet. And,
okay, thank you.
I promise you, I won't be bugging you much, at least for a week or two, okay?
Okay.
I promise.
All right.
Okay.
Take care,
thank
everybody,
you.
And thanks for your continued interest in this.
Bye-bye. Take care now. Bye-bye. Okay, Chief Kohler. Let me do this right here. Kim, sir, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You know, I'm going to offer... hi, I'm going to tell Chief Kohler that I would love to read his book. I mean, I do that. I do voice work, a lot of voice work. I would love to read his book and do an audio version if he wants me to. So hopefully that'd be so cool. Okay, let's get all our guys back online here, back on audio, taking everybody off mute. Kimster, area code 720 is on hold. Is that a listener?
Yes, that's
okay.
A listener. We have Cynic and Cold Case and Bob C. and Cherokee.
Perfect. Okay, I'll tell you what. Let's go to – we haven't heard from Cold Case yet. She's been very, very patient. Cold Case, let's hear that beautiful southern drawl. What are you thinking?
Kiss my grits. You let Kohler go, and I didn't even get to ask him one question.
I'm sorry. I told him it would be a really short show, and it turned out to be longer, and then he called back. And
I'm in a full-on pout.
And I thought, I felt guilty, and now I need more therapy. It's just a snowballing emotional effect.
No excuses.
Okay. If Kohler were here, what question would you ask him?
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, one of these days, Tricia, one of these days, I'm going to get to ask that man some questions.
I know. You've asked him, haven't you, before?
Yeah, with you breathing down my neck.
I know, I
know.
You've
got one question, Martha, and 20 seconds to ask it. Okay. So here's my questions. I wanted to ask him about the James Rapp phone records.
Now, who's that? Refresh my memory.
James Rapp was someone who actually did go to jail in this case. He illegally obtained the phone records.
That's right. And they're hidden. I mean, not hidden, but they're locked away, and nobody can look at them, right?
Well, unless they're burned by now, because that case did go to trial.
Right.
And was resolved, and he was found guilty. He may have even pled guilty.
It was a tabloid. It was a tabloid situation, and they illegally got phone records. And the police were not able to use them, supposedly not even able to look at them.
Right. And Thomas wrote about that in his book.
Right, right. Wow, that's a good...
And then another question I'd like to ask him is, Cherokee asked about the DNA, and there's been some discussion on some of the forums about those 5 to 6 samples that also do not match the Ramseys. And Kohler wrote they would be 5 to 6 different other donors. But some people speculate, of course, IDI, that they could all come from the same person. So I just wanted to ask him specifically if the markers definitely identified those as separate from each other. And
boy,
they're all partial. Mark,
I can answer
sure.
that question. I can answer that question.
Go for it.
Okay.
Cherokee is going to answer Cold Case's question.
I'm going to answer
it,
yes, because the way the DNA identification and the markers go, there is no way they all come, those 5 men and 1 woman come from the same one. First of all, you can have they could tell obviously the sex marker. I don't know if they're using mtDNA, you know, how they're doing that, but there are 3 types of DNA you can go from Y-DNA, which is male-to-male, mitochondrial DNA, which is the female, to all of her children. And then you have autosomal DNA, which is all of your ancestors back to about 5 or 6 generations. That's for doing the regular genealogy purposes. But when you're doing typing DNA for, say, a CSI case or something in this kind of case, you're just looking at a complement of 13 markers. In genealogy DNA, you can go as far as 111. But for typing purposes, they usually do 12 or 13. But you can extend it out. But you must have those 12 or 13. And what Bode Laboratories did, and what they also did with the original, quote-unquote, degraded DNA, there is not even a full complement of 12 or 13 markers to determine whether you are determining paternity, you're determining whether this person actually donated that DNA or whatever. So what they came up with was partial markers, maybe 5 from one person, 6 from another, 10 from another one. But none of them, as I just asked Kohler, that's what I wanted to find out, were any of those markers full complements? And he said no. So they're all partial DNA.
And
that still doesn't answer my question. What the argument is made by others is that let's say there were 3 markers in one of the 5 samples
right.
at whatever loci, and
right.
then there were 3 or 4 markers in another sample.
Right.
Were those all? Were there any markers within those samples that would identify one as definitely not being potentially donated from the other one?
Yes, that's what I was trying to explain. I didn't do a very good job. When they sample these markers, these SNP, they call them SNP, serotonin peptide, whatever's, when they do that, they are sampling at certain areas. This isn't just, okay, here's this marker, and here's this one, and here's this one. They are sampling at certain areas of the genome. And when they sample at that, they find, okay, here's one at, say, at 3, and here's one at 24, and here's one at 25 or 26. So in other words, they're sampling certain areas, and when that comes back, they can compare it to someone else's and say, oh, look, this one has, for instance, has the number 113 at marker 25. This one has a 116 at marker 25. Therefore, we know it's 2 different people. Do you see what I'm saying? If you compared your genetic markers to mine, it would show that we would have some similar, but of the 12 samples, see, they're not even getting 12. Certain ones of those, say 10 of them, would be different. And then of those 10, they must have at least 5 or 6 of those 10 that were at certain genetic marker, say 20, like I said, for instance, 25, your marker is a different number from mine. It's not the, it's not having the same markers. It's the numbers within those markers, because we all have different numbers within those markers. Just recently I had some genetic DNA done on some ancestors, and what it showed up, it proved that a second cousin of mine was related to someone else who was related to another ancestor, and even though he and I don't share DNA, he shares DNA with this second cousin. And this second cousin and he, they both had that same number at a certain genetic marker. I don't share that number. But that's how they know. It's not the markers, it's the numbers at the markers, and that's how they know that it's a separate person. That's how they could separate out that it's 5 men and 1 woman. So the IDIs don't know their DNA is basically what it is, because you couldn't say, otherwise they'd just say, okay, maybe it is from one person. But they were able to separate it out because the typing numbers, and this is, comes from being scanned in the, it's very kind of complicated how they do it, but it becomes scanned up, and the markers glow red or green, and they take those numbers, and they compute them, and assign those numbers to certain markers. And that's how they know it's separate. That's, I know it's a ridiculous explanation, and I wish I could be better. But does that make sense now, KK? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'll take your word for it.
could I jump in there?
Yes.
Could I jump in here?
Cynic, go ahead.
Cynic, go ahead. Maybe you can make a better explanation.
Well, I don't know if I can or not, but I'll try to add something at least anyway. Just as an example, between you and myself, we may have, obviously our sex markers will be different, but besides that, there will be a number of markers that will be different. We may have, say, 2 or 3 markers that are the same. But, we had a buccal swab, the old cheek swab, and they did a full complement of markers between the two of us, as Cherokee explained, there'd be a good 8-9 plus markers that more than likely would be different between the two of us. Between siblings, like say for example, I don't know if you have a brother or a sister, KK, but between the two of you, things become a little bit more complicated. There may be. I think I've read that I know of at least one case where there's been 9 markers in common between, siblings, just as an example, CODIS markers, that is. So, it does get a little higher as, you start to get into familial DNA. But, just to have a couple of 3 markers in common, that is really quite meaningless. Just as you have, if you have a case where you have really weak touch DNA, say, for example, in this case, Cherokee, you touched on it briefly, that there was 6 markers or whatever. Just looking over Kohler's findings, the touch DNA on the wrist bindings had a strength of 6 markers. The touch DNA on the garrote with another male profile had 7 markers. The strongest DNA in this case is the distal stain, 7-2, in the crotch of the panties with 10 markers. All of these, as Cherokee mentioned, still these are all. This is all partial profiles here. To have that, there is no full profile in this case, and that's one thing that Kohler's book confirmed, which is good. So it's the thing that shocks me, and it really I find quite striking, is that when Andy Herita did the presentation to the cold case task force, he did not reveal the strength of that so important to Mary Lacey touch DNA on the waistband of the long johns. He refused to reveal that. But he was spilling the beans about, the touch DNA strength, as I said, on the wrist binding. He said, oh, yeah, 6 markers, touch DNA on the garrote, 7 markers. But when it came to that all-important waistband DNA, all of a sudden he clammed up. I find that very interesting. I wonder how weak it is. Maybe it is only 2 to 3 markers, 5 markers, something really ridiculous. Who knows?
Well, the fingernail DNA, I remember that for so many years we were told by Lou Smith matched the DNA in the panty, the original DNA, not the touch sources, the touch process, but just the original earlier process DNA. And then it turned out it was 1 to 3 markers. There were a couple of on her fingernails, 1 to 3 markers was all any of them had. So it was like, are you kidding me? How can you possibly call that a match? But, of course, people did.
It is DNA. Bob C., are you still with us? Bob? Where'd he go? Uh-oh. I think Bob C. hung up.
He probably passed out.
Ah, Kimster, are you there with us, my dear? Kim?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you try and get Bob C. back on the phone? All of a sudden I look up and he's not here.
Okay,
because I want him back. Cherokee, my darling.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, you sound so darn smart that it's just, it's amazing. And
it's an illusion.
I want people to know that there is a reason you know your stuff. Whoop, are you on the cloud, Kimster? Kimster, it's on the air. Yikes. Kim?
Hey.
Hey, Bob, you're live on the air.
I am.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I called you back. Actually, Kimster was trying to call you back and talk to you off the air to see if you still wanted to talk, but she accidentally put you on the air, so I didn't want you to open your mouth and start swearing or something. So can you stay with us for a little while longer? Now Kimster's got him off. Hold on. Are you there, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, can you stay with us a little while longer?
Yes.
Okay, great. Did you hang up or what happened?
No, it's my phone. I think it lost connection.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, what are your thoughts on this DNA? You were jumping in and saying, yeah. You know, it when you think about it, it seems complicated, but it really isn't. It's just some numbers, and it's just nothing matches, right? I mean, it's pretty simple.
Listen, Tricia, I'm going to be totally blunt here.
Okay.
If a man sexually assaults a woman or even another man, they are going to leave behind whole cells of either semen, blood, you know, skin cells, whatever.
Right.
And it is within these cells that DNA resides.
Right.
So what you're talking about here is infinitesimal, trace evidence, and there is nothing like that. Well, there's... I feel like I can't really be honest right now.
Sure you can. Come on. Why can't you? We're all friends. I won't tell anybody.
Well, because...
First of all, there's no FCC regulation, so you can say whatever you want.
Okay. On JonBenet's body, there was never a single semen cell,
right?
Never a single blood cell that had complete, intact DNA on it. So that tells you, in fact, I recall back in 1996 or 1998 or something like that, that forensic scientists could actually regenerate DNA strands.
Right.
And I didn't even think that that was real. It sounded like science fiction to me, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do a violent sexual assault on another person, your DNA is going to be all over that place because your blood, your semen, your saliva is going to be all over that person. I know this is uncomfortable to discuss in a public forum.
No, it needs to be discussed. It's the truth.
Right.
Let me ask you something, Bob. Do you think, and this is something that I can't ask Chief Kohler because I don't want to make him feel uncomfortable.
Sure.
Obviously, there are things that Chief Kohler can't tell us. He didn't reveal everything in the book. There's more. And, he just did, obviously, even in his book, he said he just, certain things he couldn't say. Do you think there's other DNA from other family members all over JonBenet that they're not talking about?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Okay.
I think that any DNA that was on JonBenet
mm-hmm.
that night was explainable. It's the
mm-hmm.
same thing as saying that there should have been John's fingerprints and Patsy's fingerprints on the ransom note.
Mm-hmm.
Those should have been there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
If I know.
Your daughter's dead and gone and kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to read that freaking note.
You're
going
to hold it.
Front to back.
Right.
Exactly.
You're
going
to hold it. You're not going
right.
to get on your hands and knees in your underpants and read it like John said he did.
Oh, please.
I know. It's so ridiculous.
Well, since you're talking about the aspects of molestation, could I just interject? This is another question.
Please. This is cold case.
Yeah, just or comment, because I've listened to Peter Bull's show, which I advise everyone to do, on Monday the 28th, and then again he was on Tuesday, I think, for 1 hour. He had a reporter on, and it was just shocking the things they talk about
mm-hmm.
that are sort of, like you say, trickling out now. But one thing they never mention, you know, they could try to talk about this theory and that theory, and these are all lawyers and reporters and all these people who had all this inside contact and stuff way back when they were there. And they never bring up the chronic abuse
mm-hmm.
found at autopsy, that the chronic vaginal injuries that, you know, I mean, you can say, oh, it could have been caused by a bubble bath, and we know that's been a much misused excuse, but, I mean, what are the odds that this child had these kind of vaginal injuries, as well as a very, you know, damaged partial hymen from an eroded surface,
mm-hmm.
which we've heard several professional expert medical examiners who talk about the case, not those who did the autopsy, but who have talked about the results that they've seen in the autopsy report, say this is evidence that she was being molested before that night, possibly over a period of time.
Uh-huh.
You know, hello, motive. You know, why would Patsy do it? Why would John do it? Why
right.
would they do this? Well, gosh. Tell me of a family who has sexual abuse committed on a small child in the family, and they find out about it, and they just go, well, let's tell everybody.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Because this is a huge taboo, especially
mm-hmm.
if it's incest, which, by the way, remember the dictionary with the word incest?
Incest.
Open to
yes.
the page with the – I mean, I'm just, you know, saying that to what Bob C. was talking about, you know, there's no semen on the body. Kohler implies in his book that he finds some evidence important that needs to be addressed and further investigated, you know, including, go ahead.
Well, I interject here.
Bob C., go ahead.
I think that there is a 600-pound gorilla in the middle of this
discussion. Yes, you're right, and I know what you're going to say. We can say it. I'll say it. We were talking about Burke, right?
Yes.
Okay. Kohler, in his book, reveals some. Yes, just reveals some disturbing things. Go ahead, Bob C.
Well,
he's thinking.
Can I interject something?
No, I'm not thinking.
Can I interject something real quick about the one of the reasons I want to hit on the DNA so hard is because
mm-hmm.
if Mary Lacy had not done her stupid PR stunt with that stuff, when people found out there had been an indictment returned on John and Patsy, they wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. It was what was thrown up this last week or two as a defense. Oh, well, Hunter was such a hero. It would have been such a travesty because they were cleared through DNA. If I read one more time that they were cleared through DNA, that DNA is a crock. And I'll explain it again. You and I shed more DNA, partial DNA, than was found on JonBenet.
Right.
They can get full complements of DNA. They got full complements of DNA, of mitochondrial DNA, from Richard III, who'd been laying there, you know, in no coffin, just buried like he was in the dirt for 500 years. They got enough DNA to do two separate mitochondrial DNA extractions plus Y-DNA. And if they could do that to get a full complement from a body that's been buried in the dirt for 500 years, they darn sure should be able to find, as they were saying, Bob C. was saying, a full complement of DNA on JonBenet from an attacker.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break. People have no idea how my middle school.
Wait.
Yes.
Who's ever said that?
No. You were saying they should have found more. If there had been an attacker, then there should have been. Yes, there should have been. There should have been all kinds of DNA evidence, and not just some partial, not even a full complement in there. Yes.
Exactly.
And that's my point.
I mean,
the DNA they have now and how they can replicate, there should be all kinds of evidence, and there's none.
Exactly.
There's this contamination that you and I, if we had our underwear examined, that we'd never washed, right out of a package examined, you would find partial DNA. If I took this shirt off right now and had it examined for DNA, I would find partial DNA of where I had leaned up against a wall, of where I had. It is so idiotic for Mary Lacy to take that and run with it as evidence of an intruder, because they should have found, even if there was five men and a woman they found, those were all partial. There weren't even 12 markers. If there had been that many people that handled her or her clothes, there should have been at least 12 or 13 markers from each person. There should have been 13 markers in the underwear, and there should have been more than one tiny, tiny little thing. This is the part that's frustrated me for years. Yes.
Hold on now.
Okay.
I have to say that it totally annoys me that people for maybe 12 years now have been just following the false leads that the Ramsey defense have been planting here. It's like, if you sexually abuse and assault a six-year-old girl, there is going to be a ton of evidence at that crime scene.
Absolutely.
You're going to have semen. You're going to have skin cells. You're going to have blood cells and all of that. But none of this was here. Come on.
Mary Lacy did say when she was doing her egg on her face interview, press conference after she had to release Carr, that one of the reasons he was eliminated as a suspect was because, according to his story of what he did to JonBenet, his DNA would have to have been on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
that's
goodbye,
fine.
Carr.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, she didn't figure that out.
No,
like,
she didn't.
Before she...
No,
she didn't. And it's so hard to believe that Mary Lacy could be that stupid to bring John Mark Carr all the way back from Thailand based on ridiculous emails from the so-called professor, Michael Tracy.
Oh, please.
I know. That's what she did, though. That's what she did.
I
remember... I remember going on MSNBC and saying that all Mary Lacy had were these emails from Michael Tracy. And I got such a ration for that, you wouldn't believe. And I was absolutely right. Absolutely right. Bob C., we're talking about the 600-pound gorilla in the room, and that would be Burke. And you were hesitating and just ready to comment on something. What were you going to say?
Well, my opinion at this point is that after reading Kolar's book,
mm-hmm.
and after hearing all the exonerations of Burke, and with my own, career
mm-hmm.
with emotionally disturbed kids.
Right.
I will say that everything that came out in Kolar's book suddenly made this case feel like things were aligning and made sense.
And I agree. I went, okay, this makes sense. Absolutely.
Right. And if you have followed my post for 15 years,
and we have,
you will see that I never thought that anybody had gotten this murder right.
Mm-hmm.
But most of that was based on me believing the people like Steve Thomas and Kolar and Hunter and Lacey that there was no, you know, evidence whatsoever towards Burke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying Burke did the murder. I'm not saying that at all. I
mm-hmm.
don't know. But I do believe that Burke was involved in whatever led up to the murder. And I've always felt that the murder would be something very mundane
mm-hmm.
that escalated to something really, you know, obviously homicidal. And my viewing of the house reaffirmed that to me.
Right.
When I was actually in, you know, the Ramsey's house,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't about sex rings. It wasn't about sexual predators. It wasn't about, you know, foreign terrorists. It was about something very mundane that happened
mm-hmm.
that night.
Exactly.
And, but it escalated into something extraordinary. And the
yeah.
Ramseys were able to sort of make this into something seeming really exotic,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it was.
No, and I agree. Hey, guess what, everybody? We have a caller on the line that has a question. He has not been vetted yet, hasn't been checked out, so let's see who this is. Let's go to...
Bring it.
Winger. Winger, you have a question, my dear.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question that comes to mind because of a couple of the comments that were recently made by the other callers
mm-hmm.
About the dictionary and the word incest on the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
When Bob C. says that in a family where you uncover some sort of sexual abuse, you don't naturally tell anybody, I would of course agree. And I'd also extrapolate that and go on to say that another thing you don't do is go to the dictionary and look up the word incest, particularly when you've got two educated adults in the house. It just doesn't sit with me, and it
mm-hmm.
makes me wonder, actually a slew of questions. First, Tricia, is it true that the dictionary was open to that page? Do we know for a fact, was the dictionary fingerprinted or tested and evaluated in any way? And most importantly, do we know with any degree of certainty were any of the friends that were invited to the home in that room, or did they have access to that room? Because what it really indicates to me, not that somebody in the house would be researching incest,
mm-hmm.
more that somebody else maybe wanted to say something without coming right out and saying it.
Oh, no, that's an interesting, that is a very interesting observation. Let me answer this, and then Bob C., I'll go to you. And I also want to hear from Cynic on this as well. Thank you, Winger. Those are very, very good questions. First of all, I don't think the dictionary was taken in and fingerprinted. Nothing has ever been written about that I am aware of. Secondly, I'm just going by Steve Thomas's book, and according to his book, that is what was found. And so I do believe that is legitimate. As far as the other kids having access to the study, I don't know. I really don't have any idea, or anybody else having access to the study. I would assume that people could probably go in and out if they wanted to, but that's a very interesting thought. Bob C., what are your thoughts on that?
Well, my whole thing here is that, number one, this family had no history of
being abusive or anything like that. So any kind of internet gossip about them
mm-hmm.
is probably biased. But I will say that I have never seen one thing pointing to the Ramseys as being abusive or, sexually aggressive toward their daughter
mm-hmm.
prior to the murder. So, all of this speculation, I mean, I just want to stick to the facts.
But
Cold Case, hold on.
I just want to say something, and then I'll let Cold Case jump in. Okay? There were books found in the Ramsey home talking about, why does Bobby, behave inappropriately? There were books about kids sexually playing with their other siblings. There were three books in the family, in the room. I mean, in the house.
But hold on.
Okay.
I am not saying that Burke Ramsey did not play a role in this murder.
Got it.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that kids sexually acting together, especially when they're 6 or 7 years old, is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not mean that they are involved in this murder.
I understand what you're saying. Okay.
At the same time, I'm not saying that it didn't play a role in this.
Right.
I definitely, at this point, have a very, I can say on the record that I think that Burke Ramsey played some role in this murder.
Oh,
but
you
I'm
know
not
what?
Saying that he did it.
Hold on, Bob. See, I want to go to Cynic. Cynic, you have kind of the Reader's Digest version of the incest information for Winger. What? Tell us about it. Refresh our memories.
Well, it's in Steve Thomas's book. I don't have the page number, but I can tell you that it came about when Steve Thomas was reviewing information that he'd received from Don Foster, the
mm-hmm.
linguistics expert. It says, then while reviewing a list of book titles from the Ramsey home at the request of Don Foster, I dug out the Polaroid photographs from the evidence room. Using magnifying glasses, evidence tech Pat Peck and I compared the titles on the list with what the picture showed. Entire shelves of books had been overlooked. When we checked the photo from a big manila envelope marked as evidence item number 85KKY, I almost fell out of my chair, and Peck inhaled in sharp surprise. A picture showed Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary on a coffee table in the first floor study, the corner of the lower left-hand page sharply creased and pointing like an arrow to the word incest. Somebody had apparently been looking for a definition of sexual contact between family members.
Interesting. Winger, are you still with us?
I am, yes.
Okay. Does that help? In any way, does that help answer any of your questions?
It does help, particularly because, and as soon as Cynic said it, I flash back to the Thomas book as well
mm-hmm.
about if there's photographic evidence of it, then I guess there is photographic evidence of it.
Yes, it's hardcore evidence. It's there. It's literally black and white.
Could I just mention quickly that who might be looking that word up? In a house full of college-educated adults, a 9-year-old boy might hear that word and look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
You're right.
Right.
You're absolutely
interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Tricia, you better let KK talk because you put her on,
I know.
On the back burner, and you're going to have all kind of problems with her later on.
There's going to be serious retribution.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to let everybody have one final comment because we do need to wrap it up here. So I'm going to start with Cold Case. Cold Case, the floor is yours. What would you like to say?
Well, I just wanted to address, and I know this has been said for 16 years and is repeatedly an issue, but I think Kohler shot down the no history argument. I think the history is that there is a there was a problem with these children, bedwetting and what is it called, encopresis, where they defecate in their clothing and even feces on a candy, some candy in JonBenet's room, and Burke smeared it on the wall when he was a child, which is not criminal. And, you know, I know if there was any, say, doctor issues going on, that also wouldn't have been criminal at their age. But it would be a pathological problem that should have been handled with medical, psychological professionals. So I think also we have pictures of JonBenet with bruises on her body, even something that looks suspiciously on her leg like it matches the bruises that were found on her body at autopsy that Smith attributed to stun guns for so many years. But she's in a modeling photo where there are two very similar and bruises on her shin, and Kohler came up with the solution for that, he believes, being jabbed from a railroad track, which, you know, kids fight. You know,
oh, sure.
Brothers and sisters fight. So I'm not trying to make anything criminal out of that, but I'm just saying, you know, the autopsy on a six-year-old murdered child who was bludgeoned and molested or sexually assaulted the night she was murdered also proved she had been sexually assaulted or at least in some way sexually intruded upon prior to that night. To me, that is history.
I see what you're saying. Absolutely. Cold case, thank you, and I swear next time I will let you be the first one to talk to Chief Kohler, okay?
No, I'm retiring after tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, you nut. Bob C., let's go to you. Final thoughts, please.
Yes, ma'am. I think that if I could actually say something that was told to me 10 years ago about Burke Ramsey.
Why can't you tell us now? Why can't you?
Because I can't say it because I said I wouldn't say
it. Okay. Oh, understood. Okay.
Okay. Now, you're the same, Tricia.
I agree. Don't do it. If you gave your word, don't repeat it. I agree.
I'm not going to.
Okay.
But there was evidence, if you believe that people that knew the Ramseys, you know, before this thing became a stellar, you know, murder mystery case, that had things to say about that family. I'm going to say this, that there were times when Burke and JonBenet were separated on vacation. Can I say it's true? No. But I can say that I heard this at the time, and I didn't have any reason to not believe it.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So I can't say anything. I wasn't there. I don't know. But the main reason that I never suspected John Ramsey as molesting sexually JonBenet was because there was no semen at the crime scene and there were digital penetrations to her vagina. Now, my first question, being a man, is that why was there not a conclusion of this sexual event? You have to ask yourself that.
Why? Why? That, yes, I understand what you're saying.
Most of the people that follow this case are women, but I'm a man, and that always
enters your mind.
Sort of, yes. I mean, digital penetration from day one if you want to pin this thing on a sexual predator, they don't give a shit about digital penetration.
Well, exactly.
They
it goes further.
The act.
Yes.
Yes.
And so you're right. You have to look at that. You have to look at the evidence in that context. And I think that is a brilliant way to look at it. And I think everybody needs to keep that in mind. If this truly was a sexual predator, there would have been a lot more done to JonBenet and a lot more evidence.
Exactly. What's
so,
the point, Trisha?
Right.
What's
exactly.
the point of attacking this girl?
There isn't. However, just digital penetration, and this is uncomfortable to talk about, you have to ask yourself who in the house would be the one just to do only that. I don't know. You know, but that's the question we need to ask. Well,
I do. I used to be a 10-year-old boy.
Right.
Trisha.
I know. So
I understand about not being able to complete the act and all
right.
of that at a certain age.
But you know, here's the thing. It's if Burke Ramsey would come forward, maybe we could find out more. That's my goal. I know. I still hold out hope. Bob C., I am so glad you joined us tonight. Hang on, I'm not quite done yet. I want to go to Cherokee and then Cynic. Cherokee, final thoughts.
Well, I should probably give my final thoughts to KK since I took up, you know, since I was able to talk to Kohler and she wasn't. So now I'm afraid I'm going to get retribution on my head.
Oh,
but anyway.
No.
Boy, you aren't kidding.
I know it's coming. I know I'm preaching to the choir and I'm beating a dead horse about this DNA thing, but Mary Lacey should come under charges for what she's done.
I agree.
It is totally false what she's accomplished with the DNA. It doesn't hold water. If you know what DNA is, what it really contains, what it can really tell us, it's a farce. What she did is an absolute farce, and that's why she would not take questions, and that is why she would not release any kind of DNA information about what she'd done or a release sheet or anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she didn't even have to give us all of the information and the report, DNA report. I mean, I just would like to see a release sheet, which would detail the different loci, the different markers, each one, with those,
mm-hmm.
you know, the different people. And I would like to just see that. Let's just even have that. No,
nope.
We can't do that. And
exactly.
Why is that? Because she knows what she did. And I'll tell you something else. She needs to be also prosecuted for the lies she told. She and Hunter, in those things that they're in the documents to the different courts, fighting Linda Hoffman Pugh because they didn't want the grand jury testimony to get out. They said there was no indictment on those forms. They went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Right.
That needs to have some kind of legal. She needs to be disbarred. Hunter needs to be disbarred. I'm sorry. I want everybody's head on a platter that had anything to do with that, because in any other case, that they would have already been under censure.
Oh, yes.
All kinds of things. But this isn't going to happen because it's Boulder.
Exactly.
This is Colorado. Nothing's going to happen, and it just infuriates me. I'm going to get upset again, so I better calm down. It infuriates me that because it's the Ramseys, they always get away with this stuff, and the people that have helped them get away with this. No one else would have gotten away with that touch DNA exoneration.
Never.
No.
Exactly.
So frustrating. Okay, Cynic, I need you to wrap it up with a nice bow. Tell us your thoughts.
Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to be two things, a gentleman and a coward. I'm going to give my turnover to Cold Case because I don't want any retribution. And I know she has a couple of thoughts regarding Colorado justice, so I think she would be the best person to give her thoughts on that or anything for that matter. So Cold
you
Case,
are a sweetheart. Cold Case, let's hear your thoughts on Colorado justice.
Well, okay, since you asked.
I did.
I actually wrote this down earlier because I was listening to Peter Boyle's show earlier and listening to Tom Miller, who was a guest on, I believe it was Thursday, and, you know, just the other lawyers, and it was so shocking to me, the articles that we've read that you've all mentioned, that you have lawyers who are defending what Hunter did. And, you know, even journalists who are defending what Hunter did. And I can't believe they completely forget that Hunter obstructed this investigation from the start. He refused to get subpoenas for the clothing and phone records immediately. He also handed evidence over to the Ramsey lawyers as soon as he got it, within, you know, weeks of the murder. And, you know, he hogtied everyone at every turn. And, gosh, what a surprise. He couldn't get enough evidence up to get an indictment, to sign an indictment. I mean, it's so maddening. And so they completely forget this. I'm sorry, I'm not giving Hunter a pass on anything. I think the man is corrupt down to the, you know, last bone in his body. That is my opinion. And so I want to say to these lawyers who called him, of all things, courageous, because he wouldn't indict the Ramseys, I want to say to them that, you know, I know we live in a, on a violent planet and in a brutal world, but to declare the failed grand jury indictments in the abuse and murder of this child to be some kind of courageous act by Hunter is profane and takes my breath away. You know, what in the world are they thinking?
You know what? On that note, my darling, wonderful friend Cold Case, you have put the nice bow on top of this whole show. What were they thinking? We're going to always keep on top of it. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Bob C., Cynic, Cold Case, Cherokee, Winger with your one question. Thanks for calling in. And a big thank you to Chief James Kohler. We'll be back at our regular time on Sunday for Trisha's True Crime Radio. And do remember this. The opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the hosts, and of course, I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is itself just a standalone entity and is not connected in any way, shape, or form to WebSleuths.com, LLC, or to ForumsForJustice.org. Those are completely, totally separate entities. So in other words, if you get your panties in a wad about something that's said, it comes back to the show. Everybody, thank you. We'll see you next Sunday, 6 o'clock thank Mountain, you. 8 o'clock Eastern, Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, and we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone.